Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm very happy today because I have Alex Kanan on Zoom right now. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing, man? Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate you.
Hey, I'm good. I'm good. So Alex and I have a nice rapport, right? We chatted a few times. We chatted on Zoom for a Q&A for your film, La Cita, The Appointment, which I'm going to add. At the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021, it took home the Audience Award for Short Film Documentary. I said firm instead of film. Short Film Documentary. So congratulations on your award-winning documentary.
Thanks for your consideration, Jeff. Thanks for watching. It means a lot to me.
I'll share with everyone right now. It'll be a hard film to track down right now. It's Alex made an incredible documentary about a transgender woman in Tijuana, Mexico, and the violence she deals with in the streets and her dreams of reuniting with her best friend and mentor. So just really powerful documentary about a difficult subject, and it is heartbreaking. In fact, I believe your film has made me weep. And the joke around the festival is, yeah, if you make Jeff weep, he's going to like champion your film all day. I joke that as a middle-aged dude in America, you know, I've been raised for 50 plus years to hide my feelings. So I love when films bring my feelings out.
I second that. Yeah. Thank you for watching. And I'm not going to say thank you for crying, but it's a tough subject to tackle.
Well, you could say thank you. Yeah, but obviously I paid close enough attention as I watched, like,
thank you.
You know, Lord knows, I don't think a film can touch you. And this goes out to everyone listening. A film ain't going to touch you if you're on your phone while you're watching it. So that's my anti-mobile device with cinema. Little soapbox moment.
Thank you for giving your full attention to it. Like I said, it means a lot to me. Thank you.
Yeah. But this podcast, generally, you're ready for this. This podcast is as much about how someone gets into film as it is the film that I know them for, that I saw at the festival, that I'm the head programmer of. So, yeah. Alex, you want to just share your early inspirations? I mean, I'm going to give it away. You are an attorney.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you make a living as an attorney, and then you made this documentary. But I have a feeling you were interested in the arts all through your life. So how far back you want to go in your story? When did you first get inspired by the arts?
Well, I mean, thanks for that question, Jeff. That's a really good question. I grew up just adoring cinema. I grew up watching movies. My parents were movie buffs. So I grew up watching the greats like Godfather, Scarface, Martin Scorsese movies. Coy and Scotsy, we talked about that. Godfrey Reggio's Coy and Scotsy. That's my visual cinematic Bible. So a lot of great movies, Kurosawa movies, Satyajit Ray. So movies to me have always been experiences. They're not just movies. Terrence Malick, The Thin Red Line is, an important kind of movie in my life. Darren Aronofsky movies, Requiem. Did you see The Whale by chance?
Not yet.
You're in for a treat. You're in for a treat. So, Darren Aronofsky's movies, Terrence Malick's movies, these movies shaped my worldview, and they kind of shaped the adventures I would have. They shaped kind of how I would interact with certain people. And at times I feel like I'm living a Terrence Malick movie, or maybe sometimes even a Darren Aronofsky movie. So for me, the movies I'll go to a place and I'll just tell one of my parents, hey, it was, what was it like? It was like a Coin of Scotsy moment, and they'll know exactly what I mean. Basically, oh, when you went to this part of Mexico, yeah, that was a very Terrence Malick moment. I got you. I know exactly. Say no more. I know exactly what you mean. So movies are an integral part of my life. Movies are, in a way, my therapy, my therapeutic distraction. The calling for an attorney. Oh, I didn't have the brains to become a doctor. So I speak Spanish, and I worked with a lot of immigrants when I was in college. So I said, hey, I want to be an immigration attorney. So I became an attorney. I went to law school, became an attorney, and documentary filmmaking was always an ongoing passion of mine. I would make small documentaries, even when I would do legal work. So I would film documentaries of the plights of farm workers in Illinois, day laborers in Chicago. And I never really gave that up because I said, hey, I got to keep this passion going. And then when COVID...
Let me jump in. Yeah, so were you growing up in Chicago?
Yeah. I grew up in Chicago, and then I came here for law school. And I basically opened up my practice where I do immigration, criminal defense, and car accident cases. So I'm always getting a lot of inspiration from my cases, for stories. And sometimes I feel like the cases I work on are actual movies because they do turn into stories, right? But one thing that was very important for me was in COVID, when COVID hit, my friend from high school, who I used to be in a band with, I hadn't talked to him in years. He randomly reached out to me and he said, "Hey, you know, we used to jam in high school. We came up with some cool tunes. I was listening to what we did. How about if I send you some, Mike?" Because he plays guitar, I play piano. "Let me send you some of my guitar tracks. You had some synthesizer, piano, like, you know, you like Giorgio Moroder, Hans Zimmer, Max Richter, that style of music, cinematic music. Let's make some music." And I started, all of a sudden, I heard his music in his band over in Texas. And I said, "Damn, your music is good, man." So I got inspired in a good competitive way. His name's Gavin. And I wound up, you know, I started working on some music. I would send it over to Gavin. He would critique me, he would give me feedback. The next thing you know, I was like, "Hey, now I'm going to add some synthesizer. Now I'm going to add some strings. Now I'm going to add some of his guitar. Hey, I have some movie music." And that's kind of how I led into La Cita, basically. Right. So I don't know if you want to go there or if you want to ask another question.
It's up to you. I mean, let me jump back. So you guys were in a band in high school?
Yeah. It was called The Reformers. And now we're back together, The Reformers. We have like 1,000 listeners on Spotify. It's pretty cool.
I mean, that's pretty cool. And I think it shows, you know, how broad your interest can be, that you were into music and a musician and enjoying writing music. You were a film buff and you were really, I mean, anyway, you saw Koyaanisqatsi like in high school, I assume?
No, I saw it when I was, I think I remember seeing it when I was in like first grade or something. I mean, it was one of the things that shaped my worldview from childhood.
Yeah. I mean, anyone who hasn't seen Koyaanisqatsi, you just have to understand that it's one of the most beautiful documentaries ever made. It's wordless. Yeah. And it just shows you what 20th century life is like in the developed world. And without words, a lot of things that are wrong with it. And anyone who can appreciate a film like that, you know, let's just say most kids would have stopped watching like 5 minutes in, I think.
Yeah. It's that music too. I mean, Philip Glass's drone meditative music is just, it's sublime. It puts you in a trance. So Koyaanisqatsi is one of the all-time greats. And that Thin Red Line, Requiem for a Dream, I mean, some of these movies really shaped like my worldview in terms of how I see just the world, you know, the perspective and everything. So yeah, absolutely. Important movies, man.
Yeah. So I don't know if I have to say this, but listening public, don't judge attorneys, man. Your attorney might be a diverse person with tons of interests, man. It's just, it's a good job. And actually it's obviously going into immigration and other things, you know, I'm trying to give a mo. I got many friends who are attorneys.
Yeah.
Attorneys get a bad rap.
Yeah, they do. They do.
Absolutely. In our society. It's fun to shit on them. But the truth is, not only is there a lot of great law you can do in life, but also don't define someone by their work.
Yeah, no. Your work is kind of like the Fight Club line, right? You're not the pants you wear. You're not the job you work, you know?
I love that song from the Fight Club soundtrack with all those clips. I don't know if you know it. I think it's called "This Is Your Life." But anyhow,
yeah, Chemical Brothers.
And with that said, and I was just gonna, I was also gonna say, based on what you said to me, legal work is often storytelling, right? Like if you're dealing with a jury, you have to create a story for them.
Absolutely. You have to tell a story. I have a case that's coming up for trial next month. It's a criminal case where my client's looking at life in prison. So I'm basically working with my buddy, and we're trying to craft, I'm trying to work like an opening statement, put it together. You have to paint it like a movie, right? You have to walk the jury through the house, through the rooms, through the bedrooms, through the positioning of everything. Then you have to keep it in simple English and to just tell the story. Because what one of my friends said, facts tell, stories sell. So it's all about the storytelling, which is crucial, super important.
For sure. So you said you had been making playing with documentary even as a kid.
Yeah.
Anything like that you reached a stage or was really La Cita? Was that the situation? Like obviously in your legal practice, you probably come across stories all the time that strike you as like, wow, that could be a story, that could be a documentary. But was there something special about the situation that led to La Cita that made you start filming? Or had you experimented with filming like documentaries as an adult?
I had, Jeff. Yeah, I had done several documentaries for nonprofit organizations on immigration issues, but they were strictly for awareness, outreach, fundraising, which is the same purpose. I still make movies now. But the thing is, back then, I would use someone else's music. So this was the first all original production with original music, original footage, original everything. So that's why this was a big kind of like a milestone for me. And my friend Gavin Watts from my band, he was very instrumental in giving me that push. Right. And then when COVID hit, I had previously worked with transgender individuals. I represented a transgender male to female Mexican national in an asylum case. And the case went on for months. We litigated the case in immigration court. She wound up winning her case, which was cool. But I learned a lot about the transgender community. I learned about the intricacies. And then I met the star of La Cita, Grecia. And you know, we got to know each other very well, and I started to learn about her life and, you know, her daily struggles in Tijuana. So I had just written together a somewhat conventional script, which the point was to show a documentary lifestyle on what it's like being trans in Tijuana. You're poor, you're marginalized, you're transgender, and you're in Mexico, a country where there's not the greatest protection from the government, right? So I put together the script because COVID, when the state shut down in March of 2020, I didn't have, you know, the courts closed. So all of my colleagues were all calling each other saying, hey, what are we going to do? Are we still going to be able to keep our office open? What's going to happen? So there was a 2-week period where, you know, my paralegals, we kept our office open all the time, thank God. And we were able to still continue helping people and running and doing well business-wise. But while the courts were closed, while everything was at a standstill in those 2 to 3 weeks, I wrote together a short script and I told Grecia, let's just organically do it. Let's film this thing. She was game for it. And she added all those beautiful micro touches to make it authentic. We went down and we filmed in the gritty streets of East Tijuana where she lives. We were in those streets. We were in her apartment. We were there and she was telling her story. Now, unfortunately, you know, we found out that one of her friends, you know, was her transgender friend was murdered, and she was very sad about that. I remember the day she told me that her friend was murdered, and, you know, she was going through a lot. She said, hey, am I next? What's going to happen? So I said, you know what, so I tore up the script. I said, we'll start this from scratch. So we'll tell two parallel stories. We'll tell your story, we'll tell your friend's story, and we'll make it a remembrance at the same time to kind of speak to a greater crowd. So that tragic incident happened, but hopefully for the people who see it, it'll just give some kind of awareness as to these are people and they got it really hard. So we should just, you know, let's hear their stories.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, the film you made, there's, what's the term? Recreations. You recreate moments, genuine moments that happened.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah. While toning it down significantly, because you can imagine things were a lot worse in real life. Right. But hey, how I was thinking, like, I want to go for this. Let's go for this feel. Let's go for this, you know, inspired by Martin Scorsese's Mean Streets, Francois Truffaut. Let's tell the story. Let's just tell the story. And let's tell it in a very sparse, quick way.
Yeah. In an efficient way that there's just, I don't know, I guess there could be some jerks, but the way you tell it, I think it elicits so much empathy because there's no way to not, you know, this, as many documentarians have said to me, you know, sometimes people throw out the words documentary and narrative, but documentaries have a narrative. You're telling a story. And so you choose to reveal the story in a way that we get pulled in first and we care about the characters, and then we learn just how difficult and just how tragic life can be for people who are completely marginalized in their society.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, my favorite movies just kind of focus on those, you know, conflicts, and it can happen to any of us, but also groups of people who've been marginalized. So I'd always had that kind of, movies have opened my eyes to history. You know, The Killing Fields taught me about the genocide in Cambodia. Kundun taught me about the Dalai Lama. You know, you have all these movies that have just opened my eyes to different historical situations that have been very moving. So they were always kind of an inspiration for me, you know, to kind of be a means to open your eyes to something you didn't know about before and inform you.
It's always funny and sobering for me, the number of things I learned about history from film.
Yeah.
And sometimes even music. Heck, I will always remember I learned about the battles at the Crimea in World War I from The Clash. like you just, it's funny. Like, I don't, you know, obviously they can't teach us everything in American schools, but yeah, especially international, the history of that took place outside the US, they don't teach us a lot about it.
No, they don't. They don't. And as I say, history is written by the winners. So, you know, you got to keep that in mind as well. Take it with a grain of salt, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, The Killing Fields is an amazing example of,
yeah,
of it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Made by amazing people.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So was it, and equally, was it a balance really for you making this film? The joy of filmmaking mixed with the tragedy of the subject. I mean, my God, the fact that while you were shooting, someone, Gracia's friend was murdered. I mean, that just must have been a big letdown, a big emotional pull downward. But at the same time, I imagine it must have been felt good to know that you could tell her story.
Yeah, it felt very liberating in a way. And it just felt so, it felt so real, Jeff. It felt so real. It was such a cool experience. And just, you know, the wonderful thing about filmmaking is you film the, you capture these images and you don't really know how it's going to turn out, but you just improvise with it in the editing room and it turns out so good. I mean, those shots, I'm not tooting my own horn saying, oh, I get that angle was perfect, but it's just when I look and I watch it, the camera was able to capture the authenticity of those streets, which is something which is really hard. Nothing was staged, nothing was timed, nothing was put together. It was just there. We just took the freaking camera and walked around and showed it. So it was heartbreaking, but we said, look, we got to do it. You know, let's do it for her and let's do it for Grecia too. Let's do it on the macro level for the struggles of the, you know, a very marginalized group of people in a very, in a tough city, in a tough country, you know? So maybe this can be somewhat expressive on their behalf as well.
Yeah, my God. And you were also, I mean, my God, I'm not even putting it together that you were making a film based in Tijuana right before or during, you were actually shooting in 2020?
We started shooting in 2020 and we just then through 2021 we
kept shooting. I mean, isn't that when I mean, and you work in immigration law as well as other types of law, but is that not when like the border between the US and Mexico was completely FUBAR and we were keeping tens of thousands stuck where they're not supposed to be?
That was the Made in Mexico Wait in Mexico MPP program, Remain in Mexico, excuse me. So I would cross the border going into Tijuana. It was just for where I'm at right now, it's a 15-minute drive. Cross the border, and on the left side, there would be encampments of just people, droves of people just camping there. And one day we drove past, and they were all gone. I don't know where they went. It's kind of creepy, but it was clean. It was empty. So,
and that means the Mexican government moved everyone, right?
Mexico, because this is before MPP. MPP has undergone such repeated litigation. It's so confusing. Yes, no, yes, no. This administration wants to change it, but the Supreme Court says no. So it's been a hot mess, right? But yeah, during that time, imagine that. There was a lot of people waiting in Mexico. It was tough.
A lot of people in Tijuana is, honestly, I don't know if I've been there for 30 years, but It is insane that right next to San Diego, essentially a suburb of San Diego, has such intense problems from
that are mostly caused by governments are our own.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It comes down to convenience for the governments, right? Convenience and profit. And that all gets filtered through messaging and political messages and religious, you know, religious declarations mingled with, sublimely intertwined with political aspirations and profit-driven motives and stuff like that. But, you know, Tijuana is a very beautiful city. I go there. I'm familiar with a lot of Tijuana. It's not the city's fault. I mean, it's a beautiful city. The people are cool. The food is good. It has an interesting cultural landscape. It's just people kept trying to come to U.S. They couldn't cross over, so they wind up staying in Mexico, in Tijuana. People get deported, they stay in Tijuana. So all you have these communities. You know, here in America, for example, Chicago, there's the grid system, right? Urban planning. Whether or not it worked out, urban planning, there's the grid. In Tijuana, it pocket after pocket after pocket. So now you have homes in the mountains, basically. You know, you're going to drive up dirt roads to get to someone's home. And when it rains, and all these homes will have tires stacked up in front of them, because when it rains, you don't want a landfall, right? Or just an avalanche kind of thing. So, and that's another thing, you know, someone like Grecia, she grew up in that part of town, right? So she grew up in poverty. And we also want to capture that as well. In that 15 minutes away from here, it's a whole different world.
It really is. It really is. And it's, but let me push. Well, I might as well get you back on the filmmaking subject. So how long did you put into the documentary? Was it a long process, or did you kind of get the shooting done efficiently and then squeezing all your post work, all your editing work into your spare time?
Yeah, the post work didn't take too long. The post work, I got that done in a couple of sittings. I was just I was very motivated, and I really liked how it was coming together. The shooting itself probably happened over the course of a year, because it was just a matter of piecemealing. I would add a scene here, add a scene there. So it was very organic how it came together.
And just super rewarding, just kind of fun the whole time.
Yes, yes. Very rewarding. It was basically like a dream come true, in that, wow, I am living, like, some of my favorite movies are coming to life. I'm living that experience now through something I'm creating, which was very fulfilling. While telling a story.
Yeah. Yeah. Excellent. In a way, did it feel like the most official film project you've done? So was it like your film school in a way?
Yeah. Yeah. It was the project, Jeff. It was the project that just, it felt like lightning in a bottle. Everything came together. Everything was original. It's like, wow, I've got the movie. I did it. That's a really cool experience. And we get to tell a story. We get to tell a message without being preachy about it. This isn't a tweet. This isn't a post. This isn't me writing my opinion. This is somebody just telling her story, writing a letter to a friend. That's all. That's all it is. It's a letter from one friend to another.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So, excuse me. So let's move forward. So did this give you just a massive shot in the arm to make more films?
Yeah, yeah, and that's what I'm going to be submitting. I finished my new movie a couple of weeks ago. I'm going to be submitting it to your festival. Hopefully you like it, this one. Lasita served as a good springboard, because this movie is not, Lasito's 15 minutes. This new movie is about an hour. So I'm able to step a little bit, and I was able to pick up a lot of the editing things I did in Lasita. Have a lot more music in this one, many more characters. We have a lot of spoken dialogue. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'm excited for you to check it out.
Excellent. With the music you and your friend do, are you also tempted to, like, shoot some music videos?
Yeah. My friend Gavin actually did that, and I encouraged him to submit his work to you through one of the other platforms you had mentioned. He basically created a movie. It wasn't a music video. It was a film. It was a music film. He called it something really cool, where he took four of our, and it was very, and I told him, I was like, this is cool. This is Coinascotzi in the mountains of Texas. This is very cool. So he took four or five of our songs that we composed, and he put this, he paired up against this sublime desert imagery. So it's a little Werner Herzog, a little, you know, experimental, little Koi Niskatsi. So it's really cool. But yeah, it's a film video, if you will, a film movie, a music film or something.
You know, there's so much creativity going on now, you know, especially I think it's the gift of technology. Like obviously La Cita, you're, you know, being your first film, like you made it in the era where I assume the computer you use for work, it wasn't too hard to access, you know, to have, like, did you shoot it? What did you shoot on, by the way? Did you
use iPhone. Yeah.
Use the iPhone. I mean, I've said it before on this podcast, but I know filmmakers who shot on a, you know, a $10,000+, you know, 6K red camera, and then they had to use the iPhone for their pickups, and they tell you which shots are which, and you go, you know what? I can't tell them apart.
Yeah. The iPhone has this lovely gritty look to it. It was great doing it on the iPhone. This new movie I just did, yeah, I did it on the iPhone too.
And once you, did you get those lenses you pop on it yet, or you going with
No, the only thing I added to it, because there was spoken dialogue, was a mic. And the mic worked really well. It picked up the sound. And I was able to be very John Cassavetes, like Mean Streets, like the camera moves with everybody. It was cool.
Yeah, in fact, I can't name it, but I know I read an article, an interview with Steven Soderbergh, where he did actually shoot a film all on iPhone. Yeah. And he said, I wasn't experimenting. I just, for this subject, for this film, tight spaces, small spaces, moving fast, yeah, independent. He was like, I think the iPhone was the best choice.
Absolutely. Just,
I mean, my God, taking your camera package and moving it into someone's palm.
Isn't that cool? That's awesome. Yeah. You can get so intimate. It's great. You can do the way Terrence Malick in The Thin Red Line, Tree of Life, his last movie, A Hidden Life, the camera snakes in on people, right? To see their faces. It comes from their shoulder around, and it just kind of wobbles a little bit. You're there with them. You can do that with an iPhone. That's what's cool about it.
It really is cool. And then the editing side is so much more approachable now than 10, 15, you know, 20 years ago, forget about it. But now editing's the full creative, whether it's Adobe or others, full creative suites are totally affordable, and our computers are powerful enough for it.
It's great, man. It's wonderful. It's a blessing. Yeah.
It is very cool. So how long did you spend in post with La Cita, or was it, obviously your post is lengthened out because it's not like you took a 3-month sabbatical from law practice to edit.
No, I just made time for it. I made time for it. It was a therapeutic distraction. When I get stressed out about a case or something happens at work, I just try and bury myself in music. I bury myself in writing stories or working on a movie. It's a very good therapeutic distraction. So I needed that. So whenever I had time, I would just do it. A scene here, a scene there. And next thing you know, I was like, oh, wow, I like the way that scene came out. I feel inspired. Next thing you know, I edited another scene.
So you would get on a roll.
Yeah, exactly. And you're just, one of my friends told me, he told me, you know, meditation is not necessarily strictly sitting with your legs crossed and your arms folded and you're just closing your eyes and breathing. He said meditation can also be when you're doing something you enjoy and you lose track of time. So I always think about that when I work on music, I do lose track of time. So I think it's in a way meditative for me as well.
I totally get you. Heck, for me, not that it matters, but I'll share. Like for me, my meditation space is often on the tennis court because that's where my brain can just turn off.
Yeah.
I just go on auto mode and let just experience a level of focus or lack of, you know, no more thoughts. It could be, you know, having a shitty day and whatever's bothering me, I'll put out of it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the whole purpose of it. I think if more people were able to find that kind of meditative outlet, we'd be a much happier world.
And realize, people need to realize that if things are bothering them, instead of getting angry, just do something. Do something for you.
Do something. Yeah. Creating is important. Create something. Yeah.
It is. Whatever it is. Even if it's, even if you're creating a meal, whatever, just do, yeah. Go to your happy place. Well, so good to hear that you've got another film nearly done. Or are you fully done?
Oh, it's done. It's done. Yeah. Yeah. I'll send you the trailer just to check it out anyway. It's only a minute and a half, so yeah, it's fine. It won't take too much of your time. And then I'll submit the movie at your festival. It'll be cool.
Excellent. And just, so you just, seems like you got things going pretty well. You got, by the way, not to, it's a nice change of pace for me to have someone on this podcast who has a legal career that is successful and working, and then film is what you're doing for fulfillment on your time. Because Lord knows, I have a lot of people who film is their career, and then, you know, more power to them. Like, God bless them that they're putting in the effort. But, you know, at night they've got to work it in hospitality or this, that, like, you know, it's kind of fun. I'm sure a lot of people be jealous. Oh man, I wish I could, you know, but it takes a little bit of advanced, planning to become an attorney. You can't just squeeze it into your spare time.
Yeah, no, it is a stressful job. So it helps to have some kind of stressful, stress reduction activity that doesn't involve external substances or something negative in life, you know? So therapeutic and productive, that's important.
Absolutely. And I guess I'm trying to say, I'm kind of happy for you the way things worked out, because you got a nice stable life, I believe. And if you had, during college gotten shifted into filmmaking too early, then you might be like a filmmaker who's like, you know, struggling, and maybe you'd be doing the filing at a law office instead to barely cover your rent. You know what I mean? Like, it's
really cool that you say that. That's so cool.
These are the musings of a middle-aged man who is like, I just feel so, I have so much empathy for the filmmakers who are like, so much of their life is on hold because they're pursuing the arts.
It's tough, Jeff. It's tough. That's a really cool image, which you just illustrated. Yeah. That in and of itself can be a movie. He's working, he's filing in a law office, struggling. Yeah. So, but it's important also, right, to keep it as a hobby, so that for me, at least, the stress of everyday life doesn't find its way into my artistic passion. I just do it because I just love it, you know?
Right. You let it be your passion project. Yeah. If it were paying the bills, all of a sudden passion projects become
pressure.
Obligations and pressure. Yeah. Yeah. It completely changes it.
Totally. Yeah. It's a whole different animal. Yeah.
And you've got the music thing too, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Absolutely. It's great.
Do you, this is a funny question. So obviously you play keyboard. So can you play all the Koyaanisqatsi stuff? The do, 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 do.
The main theme, yes, I can play.
That'd be so cool. If I was at a dinner party and like someone sat down at a piano in a living room and started playing that. Oh, man. The people who recognize and the people who don't, that would definitely be a cool moment.
Hell yeah. That would be so cool. Yeah. Yeah. I could play the main theme. Yeah. It's really cool. It's so cool. It's such a great theme. My God.
It is. But man, when it speeds up, then that's got to be computer generated. Huh? That's
absolutely, man. Absolutely. Like the grid, that's all synthesizer.
It's very cool stuff.
Hell yeah.
I'm not sure I understand.
And is there anything else we should cover?
No, man. I think we're good. I appreciate you taking the time.
I appreciate it too. We're not completely done, because I'll let you name. Is there any social media or website for your artistic side that you'd want to share?
Not really. I just have my law firm, which is Canon Law Firm. But you know, when you Google my name, I have an IMDb page, which is cool. And on the IMDb page, you can see La Cita and the information of La Cita. You can see all the awards it won. Some people wrote reviews on it, which is cool. And I have my YouTube account, which is Winston Sizemore Productions. That's the name of my production company. Winston Sizemore is the name of an alias. Whenever I write stories, I write it under that name. And then there are a couple articles which are written on Google, on a Google search about me and my passion for film. But that's, you know, I closed down my, I haven't activated my social media in quite some time. So that's kind of all I have right now. But I'm open to suggestions. Maybe when we go offline, you can give me some suggestions in terms of how to show that one.
You know, honestly, I know everyone feels obligated to have like a social media presence or a website devoted to their endeavors. But I don't think it's as critical as we've all been sold.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, a website devoted to your films and with a bunch of trailers on it, I don't know. I'm sure your the Winston Sizemore YouTube page is enough.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And then we got the IMDb. So for the folks who like movies, everyone knows IMDb. You could just look me up there and you could see information on it. Yeah. So,
and Winston Sizemore is your nom de plume, huh?
I guess so. Yeah. Nom de plume. I guess so. Yeah.
You write under it too, as well as.
I write under it too. And then the protagonist of this new movie is named Winston. So go figure. That's funny.
You know, I get it. It's cool.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, we'll wrap it up and then we'll, by the way, everyone listening, we'll start recording again and we'll have Alex answer the four questions that we do with every filmmaker who comes on this podcast. And that means Alex will answer favorite films, three favorites, an underrated film, an overrated film, a lesser known film that people should seek out. Yep. I have a feeling our taste is going to overlap, but it's not required.
So.
In fact, I love it I think disagreement over the arts is a positive. It's always cool to see like someone go, name my favorite film and say, I think it's kind of overrated. I'm like, see, I appreciate that point of view. We don't have to be angry at people to have different opinions.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with you, man.
100%. That's my kooky and yet another soapbox for me. But I will wrap us up by first asking everyone, like and subscribe to the podcast if you have a chance. Much appreciated. You could even give it 5 stars or a thumbs up or a like, whatever is involved in that. This podcast did give birth to a TV series on Amazon Prime Video. It's just a collection of short films handpicked from the festival circuit. So if you go to Prime Video, hopefully on a nice big TV, don't watch cinema on your phone. But actually, if you love cinema on your phone, fine, do it your way. I don't want to tell people how to live their lives. But go to a Prime Video app on a smart TV or a phone and type in Discover Indie Film in the search. It'll autocomplete for you. And right now there's 7 seasons of short films on there. Every season is 10 episodes and about 20 to 25 short films in those 10 episodes. All made by people like Alex who are just making film because it's their passion. No one ever sat down and made a short film because like, I'm going to pay off my mortgage by making a short. Like they're all passion projects. So please enjoy that on Prime Video. If you want to learn more about the podcast or the TV series it gave birth to, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's @DIFWins. I mentioned that Alex's film, La Cita, The Appointment, in parentheses. I always love the, whatever. I like to give people everything. It won that audience award at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021. If you want to learn more about that festival that we hold every November, it's ShermanOaksFF.com and it's @ShermanOaksFF on social media. And Film Invasion Los Angeles, it's a sister festival of Sherman Oaks that we hold every June just to spread the work out throughout the year. And both festivals are ranked in the top 100 best reviewed worldwide out of 12,000 festivals. That's kind of cool. I got 2% of the 100 best reviewed. And Film Invasion Los Angeles, you can learn about if you go to filminvasionla.com and it's @filminvasionla on social media. I'm going to mention one last thing, which is a final. I'm like glutton for punishment. I have no respect for my personal time. So now there's a new smart TV app to tell people about. Editor's note, every time I say Hi TV, I should have actually said TV Hi. The service has been rebranded. It is called TV Hi, as in watchtvhi.com, TVHI. And you can learn more about it on social media if you go to @watchtvhi. And that's always TVHI. Back to the podcast. It is actually available now. We're in soft launch period, but we're uploading films to it. But it's on Roku TV, Apple TV, Android TV, Amazon Fire TV, and Android Mobile and iPhone Mobile. It is all, if you live somewhere and you can be a responsible user of marijuana, ITV is content that is excellent indie films that are even better to watch when you're high. But you don't have to be high. But what can I say? I felt like there was a niche in the streaming market. I don't think when I am responsibly high, and I have friends in recovery, so I always like make a point of saying, like, don't use drugs if they destroy your life. But, you know, if on occasion you like to have an edible or something and watch TV at night, you might want to check out watchhighTV.com because, man, the films on there are superb. So anyway, that's my last thing to mention. And I understand the contradiction of I just said to Alex how I don't think websites and social media really matter all that much. And then I just named like 8 of them. But Alex, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff. I appreciate you, man.
And everyone listening, you get to hear Alex's favorite films right after this. That podcast come out a day or two after this one, sometimes 3. If this one's on a Friday, obviously the 4 questions episode will be Monday. Otherwise, it'll be 2 days later. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Alex, for taking the time.
Thank you, Jeff. Yeah.